Welcome to Ask Ally, the self-publishing advice podcast from the Alliance of Independent Authors. This week, it's our monthly advanced self-publishing salon with news and views, tips and techniques for experienced indie authors. And here are your hosts for the advanced salon, Ally Advisor Joanna Penn and Director Orna Ross.
Here we are. It's November. It's kind of cold. I'm on a Swiss ball, just so you know. That's why I'm bouncing this evening, as ever.
I'm standing to attention.
Well done. I was standing, but now I'm like, I'm tired. It's the evening. But we are, even though it's dark and cold in England, we're ready and excited about what is going on in the indie world. So why don't you start by giving us a bit of an update about what you've been doing with your writing and anything happening with the Alliance?
Yeah, the Alliance is getting ready for 2018, which I can't believe, actually. We've just...
Don't say that!
I really can't. I really can't. Just published our updated Choosing a Self-Publishing Service and just got everything all in a row. And, of course, almost as soon as the guide came out, we found that one of the major... services that we had done a long and detailed analysis of is now gone. So it's just this ever-changing.
We'll talk about that in a minute. So before everyone freaks out, we'll talk about that in a minute. So carry on.
And just getting, we're finishing off our campaigns of this year. So the Blockchain for Books white paper will publish later on this month, and getting ready then for next year and some interesting things that we're going to be doing, including a new magazine for our members, Self-Publishing Quarterly, which will include all the news and information that we're putting together, but in a more digestible form for people who are finding a daily blog and stuff like that is a bit too much to digest. So we're constantly trying to find new ways to get the information across to people. And me personally, I've been doing a lot of the kind of writing that goes around a book. I think people know, have heard maybe once or twice before, that I'm launching a 9-book series next year. And I've been thinking loads about how I might go about that and do it. And I have finally settled on the way of doing it. So lots of now, people are always complaining about the writing that goes in addition to the writing of the actual book itself. But I think the key to all of that is to make it as much fun as the book writing. So that's what I'm trying to do. And focusing particularly, because I'm moving slightly in terms of my nonfiction reach and reach out with this series, and looking, it's very interesting to me to be looking at a new niche and new people, making new contacts, and looking particularly at pitch and partnership, which I think are two very key things for any author, really, fiction as well, but especially for nonfiction. And I'm really coming to feel that every single author, fiction authors too, I mean, you can't say every single author should do anything, but I really do think nonfiction is a string to everybody's bow, really. Come round to this idea that every business is now in the publishing business, and that is a huge opportunity, really, for indie authors. So talk a little bit more about that in a little while. And I was working on a script, and which I also want to get finished before the end of the year, and I had to draft in some help for that because I was drowning in the material. So I'm working with a mentor on that, and we're both on it to get it finished by the end of December. So yeah, it's all writing for me at the moment. I'm locked away in this room.
And that the script, is that an adaptation? Is that which one is that?
It's an adaptation of The Secret Rose. It's been hanging around for a while, and on and off, I dip into it and drop it off and go back to it. But now I just want to get it finished, really, because with a script, they'll change it. Really not about if anybody's ever interested in it, they're not going to take. It's not like writing a novel. It's very much just about, is there an interest in this kind of movie, and can we find a little home for it? So it's been brilliant fun, and it's been fantastic for me. One of the reasons I wanted to do it was to structure book two and book three, because this project, there's just so much research material, and I'm so in awe of all the people and so in love with them all, I really needed to kind of hone it in, and that was an ideal way to do it. So I did get that from it too. So yeah, that's me. What about you? You've been away.
Before I talk, you know, I think it's important. One, we always say this, but we are authors first. And, you know, I still think we are authors first. Everyone thinks we do other things. Like, I was at this conference and people were like, you know, how much actual writing do you get done? And I'm like, I'm doing 8 books this year. By Christmas, I'll have 8 new books out this year. And they're all books, like full length books. So, you know, we both do a lot of writing as well as all the other stuff, but you're also juggling there. So the nonfiction work, which is that finishing energy, because, you know, and a lot of people struggle with finishing energy. You know, I get a lot of emails from people saying, oh, you know, I've got like 6 books that I've got in drafts or in my drawer. And I'm like, yeah, you need to stop writing more material and you actually need to finish it. And you, it's interesting, that script, you and I went on a course couple of years ago now, and that script, we talked about that script, and I've started a couple of scripts and left them behind, and it sounds like you're full of finishing energy.
I really am, and I know exactly, I know exactly what you mean about the struggle, because I am like that. Ooh, shiny new idea, let's go over here. And I definitely opened up too many projects at once, and I definitely suffered for that, and I hope never to do it again. But you know, it actually is a resolution of mine now to try, and I've never done it actually. I've always had a few projects on the go at the same time, but in the interest of doing something different and challenging myself to try to do something different, which I think is important as creatives as well, to, you know, constantly be trying to improve not just the content but also the process itself, in the interest of doing something different, when all of these projects are shut down. First of all, I'm not doing anything else until everything is 100% finished and gone, and then I hope to start a project, work on it, finish it, and not start the next one until that one is done. And that will be a completely new experience for me.
So yeah, I'll believe it when I see it.
I know, yeah. Well, I'm going to try.
But I think that really is important, because there are these different stages. I mean, we talk often about the stages of the writing process in terms of the writing and the editing and the production, blah, blah, blah. But the energy involved, I also see people falling in the gaps. You know, like, I definitely suffer with the saggy middle in the middle of a project. Like, I love starting, I love finishing, I struggle with the middle. And that's common as well. And then there's the people who don't have enough ideas and struggle deciding on an idea. And so I do think everyone sort of falls into different camps. And we have to focus on that. I mean, I definitely believe in your weaknesses on some level. For example, I don't like live video marketing, which is kind of what we're doing. But I don't like Facebook Live. Or in fact, I've successfully had Facebook off my phone now for a month. So I think it's off. Yeah, you know, there's lots of things that it's like, if this is a weakness, like, I'm not very good at writing emails compared to someone like Nick Stevenson. I'm good at writing books,
stories
or whatever, you know. So it's, you know, we have to choose that. But in terms of the energy, if we are going to be successful as authors, you actually do have to get to grips with these 3 energy stages. And probably that those energy stages relate to each part of the process that you talk about, you know. That's also true of marketing and publishing and all
definitely
of that.
Each of those, so there are kind of 7 stages in the publishing process and in the writing process, and each of those stages needs its own different set of approaches and skills. So if you start bringing finishing energy in, you know, and trying to rush to the end, for example, and you haven't germinated properly and let the subconscious do some of the heavy lifting for you, then that's not going to work either. So I think knowing yourself is really, really key, but really important is knowing, actually, this is a staged process, and here's how I work through it, and here's what must be done. I think that's the other thing. What is negotiable? What can you give away? What can you choose not to do? And then what actually is the part? Because every project will at some point ask you to sit there and do something that, you know, every fiber of your being is saying, I don't want to do this.
I don't want to do. Exactly. And it's interesting. So just, you know, what I've been doing, I have been finishing projects. So a Map of Shadows, I did the proofreading came back. That is now, or the pre-order is up. And this is a dark fantasy novel that opens in Bath and is kind of a split world fantasy. Again, cross genre with absolutely nowhere to put it. But this is, yeah, it'll be out by Christmas. So Map of Shadows, that is now off my plate because I've done all the formatting. It's all gone. Healthy Writer, I've got here the edits that I'm hand editing. That will go to the proofreader in 2 weeks, and that will also be out by Christmas. And I am really, really proud of it. Dr. Ewan Lawson, who's my co-writer, he's done a great job. And it's very interesting because we're co-writing, and I had previously thought we would have to label each chapter, Ewan, Joanna, both. But in reading it, our voices are so different that you can tell who is writing the paragraph, or I can tell that he has edited one of my paragraphs and he can probably tell if I do his. So it's so interesting because the other co-writing I've done has really been fiction, and it's been smoothing. You know, with Jay and I, it was one mixed voice, and then the last one we did was completely different and not really editing each other. And so this has been a very different experience. So that's finishing. And then in 2 weeks' time, when that's off my plate, I've got the third sweet romance with my mum. So basically, I'm finishing three full-length books before December. And this is
amazing.
So it's pretty hardcore. But what's so funny is all three of those books have been in, you know, have been in different stages, and it's not like I'm doing all the work in 3 weeks. It's that I'm doing the finishing bits, and then I'll move into the publishing and the marketing phase and everything. So, but it's interesting because I've also been in San Francisco and Oregon. I did a kind of, you know, book research thing in San Francisco. You love San Francisco, don't you?
I do. Not as much as I loved it in the 80s.
I must say
that I still have a soft spot for it.
Exactly. Well, the Haight Ashbury, I think, is possibly a little past it now. But it was really good. And I had some very interesting research that will go into my next Arcane novel. And then I went up to Oregon to the business, the Coast Business Workshop with Dean Wesley Smith and Christine Catherine Rush, who you recently had on the Indie Author Fringe.
That's right. They are so great, both of them. And I can imagine it was a fabulous week with them, yeah?
Yeah, it was amazing. There were about 60 people there, and it's full 7 days, 6 hours a day. It's hardcore, you know, full on stuff. But I think what came out of it for me, and a couple of things, and you'll recognize this. So one thing I recognized is that Chris said to me a couple of times, you have to use a different word because people don't understand that. Like the word scalable I use, which I use a lot. And, you know, a couple of the language differences, and then over different preferences with books, like they said they're going to do print mass market print books, and I was like, why would you do that? You know, and the real, and Dean didn't realize that hardback nonfiction would sell, and I'm like, that's what I buy. So what was funny, and you and I have this disconnect, we had it even just earlier this evening over language and what we think matters, because you've had what, 20 years in publishing, and I've come from the business tech world.
Yeah, and we say different things, or I say something and you think I mean something completely different. Yeah.
And I realized this, and this was a huge realization, because I just thought before, I just didn't realize that came from the fact that you and Chris and Dean and a lot of authors, and more authors, have come from traditional publishing. And so the language you use, like Chris said, you can't have a, you know, what I'm calling a print box set. And I'm like, well, it's an ebook box set, and I've just done a print version of that. So it's the same product on Amazon. So why isn't an ebook box set a print box set? And she's like, no, it's an omnibus. And I'm like, what is an omnibus? That's ridiculous. Why do I have to call it something different? And it's funny because I feel like there, you know, we have this with indie publishing. Like you've gone like author publisher, and I've always hated that, you know, because for you, independent publishing came out, that's what the small publishers were, right? So it's so interesting, that disconnect. And I think I finally realized that's what the problem is with a lot of people. And we need to respect that with each other. But also the people coming into indie now, a lot of them are traditionally published. They don't understand our terminology. So what do you think about this terminology issue? Are we still clutching at new words?
I think it's a fantastic question, and it's something that we've been thinking about a lot. We've just actually done a glossary of terms so that we can actually begin to talk to each other.
Will I agree with them?
Well, good point. The people who are coming from different perspectives need to be able to have that cross conversation, and as well as there being that disconnect that you've highlighted there between those who were brought up with publishing terminology, a lot of which is completely kind of baffling to anybody outside. I mean, words like extent I was talking about the extent to somebody the other day, and they were there, what is the extent? And I was there, gosh, you don't, you know, you just,
I don't know what that means.
It just means the length of the book, the number of pages in the book. So yeah, you take these things for granted. The other thing that's happening is the more business-minded indies are using terms that authors, you know, who think of themselves primarily as creatives who are now publishing their work rather than business people, and may even be very off, you know, put off by certain business terms that they feel are too commercially minded, you know, that don't sit well with them. They feel maybe they're crass even, or, you know, they have resistance to it. If you're not going, if you're aiming to make money from your writing and you want to make a living as a writer, you're going to have to make some sort of compromises around that sort of language as well, at least to the level of understanding what people are talking about.
Well, that's the other thing, yeah, that came across at the business conference was that I was using, because I presented as well, and I was using phrases, so like scalable, which comes out of the tech world, which is create it once and you can sell it millions and millions of times. And I kind of saw that as an obvious thing to apply to books. And yeah, Chris said, don't use that word, people don't understand it. And I'm like, what? That's crazy. And then talking about revenue versus profit. And this is so important right now, okay? So I use this term, like, people are like, oh, I sold 10,000 books last week. And we hear that and we're like, oh, fear of missing out. Why aren't I doing that well? Why aren't I selling 10,000 books a week? And then you go, okay, so selling 10,000 books last week is fine. What was the revenue? So let's just assume it was a dollar per book. So you have revenue of $10,000 for those 10,000 books, but profit is revenue minus expenses. And that just is something that's not being talked about. So people are going, you know, I made $10,000 last week or last month without actually reporting the profit. And when I say I do a P&L or a profit and loss per book or at the end of the year and I do my accounts, people are just not doing these things. And like you say, if you want to make a living with this, you have to have more coming in than is going out. And you know, the idea of cash flow or cash flow tracking is critical for an author whose income sources are from their writing. So I think, and another big realization was that we are actually in a stabilization period. So we have every single thing we need right now as indie authors to have a global, scalable, digital and print and audio business to a global market. We have the banking we need to do multi-currency. We have online marketing. We have paid advertising the same as any other company. We have everything. But what I think a lot of authors are missing is a structure and a strategy and a business model if they want to do this as a business. So that is what we were talking about. So do you feel that? Do you feel like we're in a stabilization period where people just, let's just get the basics now in a process?
I completely agree with everything you've said. And I think the language issue is very important. And I think, though, we are also looking at a mindset issue. And you know, we do the three indie author fringes in the year, and the final one, in fact, we're not going to do it that way next year. We're going to blend it up.
I think that's a better idea.
Yeah, because what's happened is, you know, I assumed in my innocence and in my optimism that authors were going to be really interested in how you build and grow your indie author business. But they're not, really, it seems. I mean, some people are very much so and really getting on it and really beginning to understand, you know, the penny is dropping. And it begins with actually the realization that we're in the intellectual property business and what that actually means and where that rests. And also understanding that intellectual property is at the moment possibly devaluing due to digital. And it definitely is devaluing if everybody's doing everything the same way and everybody's undercutting everybody else. Eventually, we would get to the point where it has no value at all and you won't even be able to give away the stuff for free. I don't believe we are going in that direction, but I believe the thing that stops us going in that direction is to have a proper business model and a sense and understanding of what it is you're selling. Beginning right back at the beginning with what are your values and what is your value? What are you actually offering to the person who's going to read your stuff? And I don't think authors are having those kinds of discussions enough. I think, you know, there's a lot of talk about the mechanics of putting together an ebook, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of talk about marketing, and your point about profit and revenue, I think, is really obvious in the world around advertising for authors. So everybody talks about, you know, I wasn't selling any books and then I started taking ads and now I'm selling this many books and isn't that great? But without any conversation about how much the ads cost or how much it cost to be the person who was doing the work on the ads because you didn't have the visual ability to do that or, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, that's one whole conversation about profit loss and how we measure it. And it's a simple business, so it's not terribly complicated. There's a conversation about the mindset around making money out of writing at all. And there's a significant portion of people who actually find it very difficult to think about money in relation to their writing at all.
It's funny, I could have told you that about The Fringe. My book, Business for Authors, which is a really good book. And we talked, you know, if I do say so myself, but Suki and I did that thing for the Fringe. And, you know, but it sells so few, it sells about 2 copies a month. And it is pretty much the only book on business for authors, which is probably why it doesn't sell much, because you can see that when you start to get into a new subgenre of books, if there aren't any others on that topic, like blockchain, there are now tons of books springing up on blockchain and AI and all this different stuff. But, you know, last year, blockchain, there wouldn't have been potentially only really techie books. So it's interesting how that's happened. Now, Jane Friedman is bringing out a book on business for authors that she's doing with Writer's Digest next year. So I'm hoping, and then, you know, there's a lot on making a living. So obviously I've got one on that, which is the light version. But, you know, there's a lot of difference there. So it will be interesting to see. You know, I was also thinking the other day, you know, with the podcast, my podcast, which I started in 2009, and then I almost gave it up 2 years ago in like 2015, because I was like, oh, I think, you know, maybe things are moving on. And this is so what I do every time. I like translation. I got into translation too early, spent money. And now it seems like maybe now is, you know, things are coming back with translation. I got into audio too early and then ended up, and then ACX launched, and maybe just waiting a bit. So maybe we are seeing the beginnings of interest in business. It's just that you and I are too impatient.
Well, yeah, you particularly are an early adopter, but I think there's a bigger thing at play here, and that this is where my interest is at the moment in the nonfiction and the whole my own personal definition of what a creative entrepreneur is, and how as creatives we actually do think a bit differently than conventional business ways. They don't necessarily, I mean, I'm generalizing wildly, this is not true of every author by any means, and a number of authors come from a business background and don't have this issue. But nonetheless, it is very prevalent in our community that actually somebody, you know, brings up anything to do with a number and people shriek and run for the door, you know. So they actually define, by being a words person, a person who is literary by nature, it's almost like, well, I never did maths and I was no good at that, and if anybody says anything about business, I'm gone. And yet at the same time, these people are saying, I want to make it, and they want that money as anything.
Exactly.
So there's a learning curve and there's a language bar, I think. I think the language of economics as it is laid out is actually kind of unfriendly for people of a creative disposition. I think creatives also can do it differently. You know, it is possible. I consider myself living proof of that. I am not business-minded at all in a conventional way, but I do manage to make a living doing what I love. While also, you know, furthering what I think are important things in the world. And that's kind of my definition of creative entrepreneur, that you're creating value at the level that you actually think it's important, and you're engaging with passion, you know, the things that you're passionate about and the things that you love to do. So
we will be talking more on this, but you have a full day workshop this month, don't you, on how to create anything, which presumably will include this.
Just tell people about that. Yeah, it's all about this. It's all about the creative way and how it is different and very doable, but how we need to kind of go back to first principles and understand what it is that we need to do and how we want to do it ourselves. It begins with that whole thing of defining what success is for us. Creative success is usually, while we can define it in commercial terms, of course, it's usually got something more than that going on as well. And, you know, too often, I think what's happening with people is, oh, I'll try self-publishing then. Everybody says you make more money self-publishing than trade publishing. So I'm going over here now to do this. And then you get so caught up, completely understandably, so caught up with the challenges of learning the technicalities of making and distributing a book, which takes a while, you know, that is a learning curve, that you forget who you are, what, you know, what you're, you find it very difficult to marry those two things. So you'll hear so many authors saying, I love writing, but I hate marketing. And that just doesn't make sense. That actually doesn't add up, because marketing for a writer is actually some form of writing. And because, you know, if you love your writing, you surely also love your reader, and you want to connect those two things together. The thing is that what you don't love is sleazy marketing or traditional marketing or conventional ways of marketing. You've got to find your own way. And I think that's, I think you're absolutely right. We're in a time phase here where people, more and more and more authors are going to come around, and not just authors, also artists and therapists and healers and, you know, movers and shakers and activists are going to come around to understanding the power of the tools that we've been given, and that there are, you know, they can find their own way to do things, but they need some guidance, I think, to be able to do that. And a lot of people don't understand the creative process well at all. They apply it to their writing, but they don't apply it to their actual,
to everything else,
or to their business. Which is,
yeah, and to me, like, business is incredibly creative. And you know, we have an idea, we create it in the world. That's what businesses do. That's exciting. In fact, it's interesting. This week, Jeff Bezos took $1 billion out of Amazon. He cashed in some of his shares, and you know, he has said he's going to channel $1 billion a year into his rocket company because Bezos cares about the moon. And I love this because, you know, I have a business that funds my life, and I can see that he actually created Amazon in order to fund his rockets to the moon, which is quite cool, right? So, I mean, you know, you can go small or big. But just so everyone knows, it's Saturday, 25th of November. Is that correct?
That's right. Yes, Regent's University.
And people can find out that at ornaross.com. Just want everyone to know I will be there, so I'm excited about that. So also just on the, I mean, we're talking about a lot here, but I felt the stabilization in, for certainly talking with Dean and Chris and me and a couple of the more mature in a business sense indies, we were like, we actually have everything. Everything that's coming now is making things better. So, for example, BookFunnel announced a direct sales integration with Sales, PayPal, and WooCommerce, which is great. So I'm getting that all moved over, which means the sideload, you can sell direct from your website, and now it gets sideloaded, which is fantastic. So I think...
Explain sideloaded.
Yeah.
Language. I mean,
oh yeah, so as in people can buy the book from me and then they can get the download on their phone without having to download the file and email it to themselves or plug in their device. And that solves a huge delivery problem we've been having. And I said this to Damon 2 years ago, and I'm so pleased they've done it. Things like, you know, just the stuff that is happening right now is making it easier, but we've actually got everything. So it feels like, and then the next big shifts are going to be, the blockchain will be like PayPal. It will completely revolutionize payments. It will do other things, but that is a big thing people can visualize. How did we do multi-currency payments before PayPal? We had to have a bank account with stupid, you know, paper machines, and it was really expensive. And so there's
took an hour. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there are cultural changes coming. So potentially the end of jobs with AI and robots and self-driving cars and aging boomers and, you know, global expansion, rising middle class, internet, 4G internet to the world by 2025. I'm always early, yes, but I see, if I think it's going to be 5 years, maybe it's 10 years, but I almost feel like there's a, if we stabilize now and build our business and our processes and they are secure, we can then start looking at, okay, so we're positioning for global growth. Which I'm so excited about, micropayments, about, you know, multi-currency, about India, and things like writing nonfiction. I'm glad you mentioned that, because this is my next hobby horse, which is everyone should be writing nonfiction. If you write mysteries, write a book on how to write a mystery, or write a book about your research, or because what I see coming is, as well as the global expansion of the internet, you're going to get more and more writers. And we are a self-sustaining industry because every new writer buys a ton of books. Yes, they may write lots of books, but most of them will buy more books than they write. So we should be encouraging every single new person who joins our industry to write more books and thus be suppliers of that knowledge to people who are coming behind us. So and also building a personal brand and a personal platform to sell direct, because I do think that's going to be even more important.
It's coming for sure. I'm really interested that you're saying that and coming to similar conclusions in Oregon that I've been coming to here, sitting in my study as I look at my own,
We're a mind meld.
It's very interesting because honestly, I've been thinking about so many of these things in relation to this event that is coming up and also the series that I'm writing. And I would add, I agree with every word, and I would add to what you said that every business now is also in the publishing business. Mm. Every business needs to create its platform. Every business needs to get out there. So there are lots of, if you don't want to write about writing, and you know, lots of writers don't want to explain the nuts and bolts, so they don't want to look at it, or they don't want to kind of disturb the magic, or they just are sick of doing it all day. And it's the last thing they want to kind of base their nonfiction business on. Think about your hobby, think about your family, think about your life, think about, you know, your life experience, whatever it is. Look at local businesses and their needs around publishing and platforming and branding and all the things that you've learned to do for yourself, they need to do also. Every individual with a social media account is in effect a publisher too. So publishing, a skill that you are amassing, you know, and getting really, really good at by publishing books, which is the hardest thing to publish, but also by publishing then all the stuff that goes around the book, you've your area of expertise that is a potential day job that can sit beside your fiction writing or your other kind of writing. So things are changing very, very fast. As an author who is, as an indie author, you are a creative entrepreneur, and creative entrepreneurship is very much on the rise. So you have a lot in common with other creative entrepreneurs like artists, musicians, and the kind of people I was talking about earlier, coaches, lifestyle people. You know, we're all trying to do something similar, but we as creative writers are actually very highly skilled in things that other people just can't do. So it's time to really think laterally. As you say, the tools have stabilized, the main players are in the marketplace. It's very difficult to see how any new, but of course I'll probably be proven completely wrong and we'll see something completely different come in, but it is it's difficult to see how in the current situation any new supplier can come in doing anything different. We can always have people who are trying to do something, but essentially it's there. Everything we need to make a living is there, but what you need to know is what are your fundamentals that aren't changeable. And it is heartening, actually, I think, that, you know, back in 2012, 2011, when you and I were starting out, when Ally was founded, so much of what we said at that time when we were starting off, and we didn't really know, they were educated guesses and hunches and sort of creative feelings about things, but they have actually turned out to be the things that have stabilized and stayed here while so much has fallen away. So the fundamentals of producing a good book, of getting the best design you can afford, the best editing you can afford, all those things are really important. And the fundamentals of business are just as important if you want to make a living. They're equally crucial. You must master those as well. Then you're sorted.
Yay! Well, it's funny, and I know if anyone's listening and they're feeling like, whoa, there's so much, and you know, you said a lot's changing. I feel like things are changing, but they're not changing. I still think we, you know, our business is a business like any other business. It's just that we actually create the stuff that we then sell, which many businesses don't do. But it is, you know, we could actually talk about this for hours, but we have a couple more things and we're already nearly at the end of our time. So we have to circle back to your sort of headline comment, which is one of the players has disappeared, which I think I actually picked on this show a couple of years ago that it would never last. So why don't you tell people about that?
Yes, for those of you who haven't heard and whose books are involved in any way with pronouns, sadly, we have lost Pronoun. They announced pretty suddenly, actually, yesterday that it was no more. And yes, Jo, as you rightly say, you know, straight away when they came on the market, I remember getting an email saying, what's this about? How can this work? This can't possibly work. What's the model? And that's, I guess, a really good, if there is a lesson to be taken from this, it is, you know, for us as indies to ask, what is our model? What is our business model? And you know, while we are talking business so much tonight, I would recommend that everybody has more than one stream of income. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, a model that is based on one supplier producing one kind of genre, one kind of book and nothing around that, that is a vulnerable sort of position to be in for an indie. But yes, Pronoun is gone anyway, which is very sad. We wished them well, but essentially, I don't think they ever really worked out what they were doing. They were VOOC before that. Lots of good, you know, people with good intentions in the company, but not a sustainable business model that could last. And so,
and this is a very good example of revenue versus profit, because they were obviously getting revenue, but then they were passing on 100% to the authors, as in they weren't taking a cut from publishing, which is the sustainable business model that all the rest of them do. You know, all the big players take a percentage of the sale of the book. So it's free to publish, but you know, you pay your percent, and they didn't take any. And that's why I said straight up, they will either do expensive author packages, or they are mining the data, or they're going to up the royalties at some point. And they didn't do any of that 2 years later. And then they got bought by Macmillan, and Macmillan, big publisher, looks at their bottom line at half year results or whatever, says, what the hell's this? Why is there a minus figure on it for the salaries of the people involved? Cut. Because, and this is actually, I was thinking about this from a traditional publishing point of view, as soon as you become a small line item on somebody's P&L, you have to defend your position a hell of a lot more. And, you know, if you're the big fish and it's your company, then it's all good. But as soon as you're a tiny line item on a very big company, it's gonna be difficult. So that's why I sort of saw that from the beginning. And again, the lesson for authors is, if you are either getting revenue but no profit or no revenue, then that's, you know, you're going to run out of cash flow and you're going to go out of business, which is basically what's happened. And the other story there is, I think it's also important as an author about who you license your rights to, because lots of authors with traditional publishing license rights to publishers. They know nothing about the company. So I've been doing a lot of looking. I was thinking, oh, I'm going to buy some shares in Bloomsbury and then I can have a look at their accounts and stuff. And I've been looking at all their stuff. And in the end, I was like, no, I'm not buying shares in that company. Because if you look at all the different stuff around what's freely available to look at for their company, it's not a company you would invest in. That's purely my opinion, by the way. And I'm not a financial advisor or accountant or anything, but I was like, okay. And there was a company I was interested in submitting Map of Shadows to originally, and then I found out how the company was structured and who owned it, and I did not want my book involved with a company that was structured like that. So these are some big issues around who owns copyright and how you structure your business. So fascinating stuff.
Yeah, really important. And I don't think publishing was ever considered to be a particularly good business idea. You know, people go into publishing because they love books, not because they love business in the main. And, you know, and trade publishing becomes ever less and less. It's got to be scaled to the big corporate now, or just find a tiny niche and a book that really, really works. And for an indie publisher, and one book keeps everybody going.
Yeah, J.K. Rowling from Bloomsbury. Exactly. But okay, we haven't got much time. We're going to do rapid fire.
Okay, rapid fire me, Joe.
Rapid fire you. So what is the new publishing standard and why should we care?
The new publishing standard? Oh, this is Mark, is it? Oh, God. I didn't realize it was
like, okay, it's late.
10 questions I had to answer like a quiz. Oh, dear, this hour of the night. It's late here in London. Yes, the wonderful Mark Williams, who's very global-minded, has now become editor-in-chief of that title you just said.
The new publishing standard.
It's already gone over my head.
It's at the new publishingstandard.com, and I'll take over. The point is, it is a global publishing look at the rest of the world, and that's what's so refreshing, because most publishing news is directed at the US, the UK, and, you know, sort of upcoming Sharjah and, you know, that new book fair. But there's nothing really about sub-Saharan Africa, Asia, the rest of the world, which is what the new publishing standard is doing. Mark is a British expat living in the Gambia in Africa. He really understands the, you know, the dichotomies of Africa between, you know, poverty and entrepreneurship and, you know, some really interesting stuff. And it's also with StreetLib. So if we're talking about the players, you know, we've got Amazon, Kobo, iBooks, I don't count Nook anymore, Drafter Digital, Smashwords, and then StreetLib and Publish Drive. I would say that those are our established players. Google Play you can get to through Publish Drive, through StreetLib. Those are pretty much the established players. And the only two international ones there are StreetLib and Publish Drive. The rest of them are US or, you know, Apple. Kobo being Canadian, but you know, what's interesting is the new publishing standard is reporting news every day that I hadn't heard, and I love it. I'm reading it every day. I'm retweeting it every day. I love it. So if you're interested, yeah, if you're interested in looking beyond the established markets, then check out the new publishing standard.
And you should, just to briefly say, because one of the interesting nuggets that came out there was last week was that more people downloaded ebooks in Nigeria last year than in North America. So
yeah, that's because they don't have bookstores, many bookstores, exactly. And they're all on mobile economy. And this is, you know, I've been talking about this for so many years, and people just haven't believed me. So I'm really pleased that we've now got this new focused, more official looking, because Mark hasn't been very official looking. Before with a sort of Facebook group, but this to me is the start of the
holistic
real rise.
Global is what he's calling it. Holistic global.
Yeah, excellent. Also, the Audible, I found this fascinating this month. Audible has launched a romance audiobook subscription model, all you can listen to romance with, get this, a skip to the interesting parts.
Oh, God.
It's brilliant. But why I'm so excited about this. So one, they totally respect readers. This is a model that would never have come from traditional publishing, right? No respect for romance readers. And the second thing is they've subcategorized the audio into very granular things. So you can listen to sweet, or you can go all the way up to steamy and listen to the heavy breathing, or you and the bed springs, or whatever. And then you can dive down into like the different characters, so what type of hero you want, and then all different granularities, which we haven't seen with audio before. And I'm so, so hoping that they're going to do this with other categories, because in thrillers, you can't be discovered. It's useless right now. So that's why I'm excited. Are you interested in that?
Yes, I think it's interesting, and audio, something has to be done. So many readers and discoverability is so very difficult. Even, you know, there is no easy way with audio. So yeah, go. That would be marvelous.
That would be marvelous. Anything else? Oh, two new podcasts. Did you want to mention that?
Yeah. Smashwords started a podcast,
yay!
Which is very interesting. One of the oldest players in the indie space is now starting a podcast, and you know, I hear a lot of indies saying, oh, I would have loved to have done a podcast, but that ship has sailed. And, you know, that's like the people who say self-publishing a book is no good because most books, self-published books, don't sell. It doesn't work like that. You have to work. If you would love to do a podcast and you think you have something of value and you have an idea of how you can reach readers with it, then, or listeners, I should say, then for heaven's sake, do it. You know, there's plenty of room in this space still we are all very ahead of the game, actually. And yeah. there are lots and lots of readers who are and listeners who are just coming online, people who weren't online before and who weren't online as readers, you know. So, yeah, don't be held back by the, oh, it's too late or everybody else is doing it or whatever. It doesn't work like that. I forget who the second person is.
It's Dave Chesson from Kindlepreneur.
Yes, wonderful Dave.
Yeah, so what he started the book marketing podcast. Good on Dave to take a really obvious, nice SEO keyword title, because he makes KDP Rocket, which is fantastic for keywords. And what I like about these two podcasts, so it's interesting. So when I started podcasting back in the day, 2009, it was very unstructured. There were some interviews, but it was, you know, now there is a way to podcast, a way to do the tech, a way to launch, you know, there's established processes that I never had. And what they've done is they've honed in on specific topics per show. So instead of just, you know, ongoing, like I've done for years, they're kind of like, these are the topics. Each week I do one topic, and they've launched with multiple episodes, which is exactly what you should do. And I think both of them are great. And this is the other thing, like people say to me now, how can I teach them about publishing their book for the first time? And I'm like, well, fair enough. You know, why don't you teach people how to publish books for the first time? Because I know it's different now than it was back when I did it. So fair enough. Put your voice out in the world and people will come to you. They don't want to listen to you and me. They can go listen to someone who's got a different voice and a different perspective. And that's where we are. So it's definitely not too late. And like, I want everyone to write more books. I want everyone to have podcasts and
let's hear your voices.
Yes, let's get out there. Okay, so what's happening with you in, our next show is going to be only 3 weeks' time, so Tuesday 28th of November. That's going to be the last of the year. That is the December show that we record. So what are you doing in the next couple of weeks, apart from the live event? Anything else you want to tell people?
Not really. Finishing off the series, getting ready for the busiest time of the year in publishing and book selling, I should say.
When we make loads of money.
Yes. So, yeah, I think it's important at this time of year for people to think, just like everybody should, you know, we're full of the shoulds tonight, aren't we? Another thing, every indie should have a Christmas book.
I don't have one. I'll tell you what I have done based on your feedback partly over the years. Every December I say to you, oh, I'm so over everything. I just hate everything. And you're like, yeah, you're not good in December. And this year I actually have blocked out December and have done that with a recurring calendar event until the end of time, where I basically have December without doing loads of other stuff. So basically December, I'm going to just try and I want to get into my shadow book. Lots of things I want to be doing creatively, but not be out there. And that should hopefully help that. So that's a learning after many, many years. You know,
that's great.
It's a big deal. And
creative rest.
Yeah, creative rest. And we should also say, if we have piqued anyone's interest around business, the Indie Author Fringe recordings are all available, aren't they? Covering loads.
Widely available, yes. Yep. Do have a listen to Joanna's session about how to be an authorpreneur, because it does lay the basics. And, you know, I thought Suki draws you out really well, and she gets it too, because she's just written a book about authorpreneurship also. So it's a good place to start.
Yeah. She's also a consultant in fintech and, you know, female entrepreneur, startup woman. She's like incredible business mind. So yeah, that was a fun conversation. But yeah, I'll be publishing Madly, and hopefully on the next show I'll have a print copy of Map of Shadows, and it's a gorgeous cover. Everyone's loving the cover, so I'm really excited about that.
Fantastic. Look forward to that. And until then, everybody, happy writing and publishing.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Ask Ally Advanced Self-Publishing Salon with Alliance of Independent Authors Director Orla Ross and Advisor Joanna Penn of thecreativepen.com, keeping you up to date with the fast-changing choices and challenges of self-publishing. The Self-Publishing Advice Broadcast is a weekly show brought to you by Ally, the Alliance of Independent Authors, and this advanced salon is one of four regular slots. The others are a beginner's salon, a member Q&A, and a special guest highlight presentation from the Indie Author Fringe, Ally's free online author conference. Find more author advice, tips, and tools at our Self-Publishing Advice Center, selfpublishingadvice.org. And if you haven't already, we invite you to join our organization and become a self-publishing ally. You can do that at AllianceIndependentAuthors.org. Now, go write and publish.